90% of all scientists that have ever been alive are alive today. That's a lot of information. But don't panic. It's not an exact science.
Hey, Shannon, how are you?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
things are
lovely outside, right?
Yeah, I mean, things are going pretty well. It's lovely outside, so I'm expecting the meteor any moment.
Yeah, exactly. We're having our first severe weather day tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, it's on property insurance renewal day for me.
You never thought you'd have to, like, actually pay attention to the actual time stamp, but maybe that's right. Going to be the case.
When does my new deductible go into effect? Mm-hmm. I'm taking radar screenshots as evidence.
God. Of course you are.
No, they were, it reminds me when we were in Colorado and we had roof damage and the insurance company didn't want to pay because they said we weren't affected. So I had photos with a ruler of the hailstones. And then I also sent them a map with our house marked on it, an overlay of the NWS watches and warnings, and an overlay of all the reports.
And they immediately said, we do not want to deal with this guy.
Right.
Pay him off, please. I mean, you got to be prepared for that kind of stuff, right?
It's true. We also had, I did get to use the meteorology flex one other time. Very recently. This is like this week, though, when we had a package, overnight package that was delayed, and they didn't want to refund the shipping. Mm. And they said, well, the Tulsa Sort Center was closed because of winter weather. This is the day that there were, like, raging wildfires across the state.
Oh, my God.
And so our office manager said, this is what they said. And I said, well, you can tell them that there are wildfires everywhere. And if they want to talk to our on-staff degreed meteorologist, that he would be happy to enlighten them.
And you got your money back?
And we got our money back.
Man, I'm really disappointed that you've only flexed that much. I've certainly run around flexing my meteorology quite a lot.
See, most of the time, I just don't want the questions.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. No,
that are going to come with it.
I understand. Yes, that is absolutely true. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I get that for sure. So I'm pretty excited, though. This weekend, I am traveling to the University of Kansas to help with some development for a digital mapping program.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. I think. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't use it. I've messed around with digital mapping before. And I interview in great detail students who come from graduate students that come from programs that have used them. So we shall see if this weekend changes my mind at all. I say there's a 40% chance. No. 25% chance.
Yeah. I will be very interested to talk to you after you get back from that.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying to go in with a fully open mind. And so we'll see what next week when we speak brings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were discussing what we were going to talk about this week. And suddenly I had a message from you that said, oh, I figured it out. We're going to talk about the most recent national parks. And I opened this list of the most recent national parks, fully expecting to see dates in, like, the 60s and 70s.
I know!
And instead, they're from 2018 to 2020.
Yes! Oh, man. And there's four, right? So that's exactly what I was hoping was going to happen. That is 100% what I had hoped. Yeah. It's not very long ago, right? And so this was precipitated by, I had this cryptic. So I am as we've talked about numerous times, I have tons of notebooks. I also have tons of sticky notes. I'm just a sticky note person. I'm probably the only person that uses the sticky notes app on the Windows desktop. like a lot.
So, probably.
Probably. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just a sticky note kind of person. And so, God, this is so embarrassing. This is a little bit of the bullet journal coming out here. So what happens is the sticky notes collect both at home and at work. And then I collect them all together. And then I make my bullet journal list from this like massive chunk of sticky notes.
I mean, I understand the system.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it is a tree killing system for sure.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you remember that there are junk mail companies and
yeah,
feel
see?
Less bad.
Exactly. That is exactly right. And the joy all of my cat-shaped sticky notes brings me is infinitely irreplaceable. So yeah, so I had this like national park written on this sticky note. I have no idea why the sticky note was too old for me to know what it was. It just said New River National Park. I'm like, what is this? Like, because we talk about national parks a lot. I thought, I mean, I know there's some of them that are not as well known, but I thought I knew most of them. Yeah. And so I said, so, wow, that's a new park.
Yeah, I will throw in a handy tip that my advisor drilled into me in grad school. Date and initial every piece of paper you pick up, the first thing you do to it.
That's a great idea. That is true.
It really is, because then you get a scrap of paper like that sticky note.
Mm-hmm.
I have definitely found stuff when I've opened old notebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Been like searching for like, oh, I know I took notes on, you know, this one person's lecture. I think it was about 20 whatever. And so I start flipping through my notebook from that time, and I'll find a sticky note. And it's, you know, dated like JRL 2-2018. I'm like, ooh.
That is a great idea.
That's been around for a while.
Mm.
It also helps when you do desk sedimentology.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I like it when I find the ones that I'm like, man, I knew I threw like the back of that sticky note stack out like 5 months ago, and there's one of those sticky notes still here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But there's a woman in our office who does sticky notes for sure. She's a sticky note person. She just has all one color. I'm like, how do you know? Like, you gotta facies change these things. You can't.
You right.
can't just use one color. That's atrocious.
I have multiple colors. I do firmly believe in picking a size and shape and sticking to it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. How are you supposed to know the difference between when you've written something down on the blue cat sticky notes versus when you've written down the one on the cat with a coffee cup and its hair is all crazy sticky notes? Those are two very different emergency situations. I wish I were kidding about either one of those things, but I'm not.
No, I just have a few colors of the standard, you know, roughly 3x3.
Okay, fine. At least you use multiple colors. You're not that kind of monster.
I mean, they don't mean anything. They're just multiple colors.
Right, right. But it just, I don't know. It has to exist for me. That was quite the tangent.
Yes, but so national parks. And let's start out with the fourth most recent, which when I first opened this up, I was like, oh no, are these going to be any vaguely geological parks? Because this one's the Gateway Arch in St. Louis.
Yeah. I mean, so this is clearly been around for quite some time. And I don't know. I mean, I've been there several times. I guess, yeah, not a national park. Mm-hmm. Until 2018.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that. I've seen it from afar. I've never gone up in it.
You've never gone up in it?
Things to do.
You've never gone. It's the most... I think you have to go as a kid. Well, I don't know. It gets scarier to me. Like, the little elevators to get up there are just terrifying. And frankly, I'm not sure I could do it now.
Well, and I was reading about the different times they've broken down and people have been stuck in them for like 4 hours with no power and no air conditioning.
Exactly. They're really small. So like, yeah, the little elevators are really small. And I remember my mom wouldn't go in them at all. When I was little, she's like, nope, not going to do this. And it's like, it takes a while for them to get up there. It's a very interesting experience. I've certainly had like nightmares about these exact elevators before.
Yeah, it said that the idea was it was part Ferris wheel, part elevator, and I don't remember how long exactly I read it takes to get up, but 3 or 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like 4 minute journey to the top. Yeah, it feels like 90 minutes, and you're just sitting there, and it just rotates very loudly. I mean, it's super cool. The coolest part is like you're up in there, and the thing is swaying because, yeah, that's what happens when you build something that big, right? And it's swaying back and forth, and you can tell that it is, and that's really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really strange situation. So I wonder, I don't know, this might be something that we should find somebody in the Park Service to ask this about, because I would have thought that Gateway Arch was like a National Historic Place. Because I know that's a designation too.
It is. Now, I know there are some like reflecting ponds and things around it associated with the river. So maybe that's what gave it park status.
Ooh, okay. That's great. That's interesting. Okay, so I looked this up, right? National Historic Parks are commonly areas of greater physical extent than National Historic Sites. So yeah, probably exactly right.
Okay.
So you include all of the extent right around there. And there you go. Interesting.
So I did strive to find something geological, like something about them building the foundations and what they had to go through rock. No, other than it's by the river, not much
to it. It's by the river. Exactly. So, you know, that's a pretty iconic place. Interesting that it's just in the last, gosh, that seems like a long time now, 6 years become a national park. It's actually right after the anniversary of its 6th year as a national park. I didn't realize that. I knew it was like a gateway to the West thing, but it was like a Thomas Jefferson thing too. I guess I never really put that together. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a memorial to Thomas Jefferson opening the West, which was obviously already populated and open, but that's okay. Right. It's certainly worth it. It's really fun. It's a really cool place to go. And you're right, the outdoor spaces right around the bottom of the arch are really amazing. So there's one for Missouri. I don't know. Are there any other national parks in Missouri?
Let's see. It might be a historic site, but there's a George Washington Carver site.
Yeah, I think that might just be a historic site. So I wonder if this was Missouri's first national park. That'd actually be really interesting. We're going to run that down in a different show, I think.
So then if we go to the more geological parks now, we go forward a year into February of 2019, and we get Indiana Dunes National Park.
I remember when this became a national park, because I had no idea, like, what this was at all. Had you heard of this before?
I had not, and it's quite small. I put that in air quotes because it's still 15,000 acres.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's 62 square kilometers for you non-acre folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for a park, that's pretty small.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I guess not small enough to be a national historic site, but, you know. So this is exactly what it says, right? The Indiana Dunes. I was trying to find. It is this small area. It's along Lake Michigan, so really far up there in Indiana. It's kind of one of these, it's like right along the shoreline, right? So it's actually the dunes of the lake. I mean, the Great Lakes, I don't know a lot about it because I haven't done a lot of geology up there. I mean, I've been to all of them, but just on like family vacations and stuff. And so the fact that these lakes are as big as they are, and if you took the water away, they look like oceans, essentially, with the kinds of sedimentological processes that are going on there. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, and this is a, you know, they're pretty young features because we're looking at things that were formed during glacial retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So forming over 40,000 years or so.
Yeah.
And there were actually four major glacial lake periods that formed these dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have named these lakes. So there's Lake Chicago, which was 14,000 years ago. Lake Algonquin, 9,000. Lake Chippewa, 7,000. And Nipissing, sure?
Sure.
4,000.
I was really glad you did this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, these are just really glacial retreat lakes that have formed right next to the Great Lake that's there and given us these dune structures and giant, basically giant pond structures.
Yeah. I mean, if you looked at these pictures, you wouldn't say that was, without anything else, you wouldn't say that was a lake. Like,
right.
Not at all. Not at all.
But they're also historically pretty important. There were some originally Native American kind of transitional hunting camps, seasonal hunting camps.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also eventual permanent occupation.
Right.
So there's a lot of artifacts and things that have been found here as well.
This one is really cool. Like I said, I remember when it happened, but... this one definitely, after looking into it a little bit more, has made it further up my list of places that I would like to go. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not somewhere I'm normally at in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be worth a visit.
It is just north of the Kentland Impact Crater, though. So.
Oh, there you go.
You can always go check that out, and then when you have a graphic on your website that warns you to stay off of shelf ice, like, it gets really cold up there, right? So this reminds you that, this was actually formed and this by the glaciers, and this lake is big enough that you develop icebergs, essentially, in it.
Which, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's interesting. So with these four separate lakes that existed before, this is like Lake Bonneville we've talked about on the show, and other Ice Age lakes when we talked about the Ice Age Trail. I wonder how many like drop stones are out there in the middle of this lake. Probably a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there should be a ton.
There should be a ton. How interesting. That's really cool to think about what those deposits will look like, you know. However long.
Are you going to go do scuba paleomagnetism?
Sounds good. I don't know if those little new battery-powered drills work underwater, but.
Yeah, but I finally don't have to carry water for you.
That's the plus side.
just have to, you know, carry a hydraulic power pack and have it on a boat.
Exactly. That's fine. It's much easier than lugging it on your back.
It's true.
Yeah. So this almost convinces me to want to go here in the wintertime, which is not something I would ever think I would want to do. But yeah, so this is really neat. I mean, it's also like, it's little, again, in air quotes, little areas, very skinny. It's like a really skinny swath right along, just encompassing that coastline.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting to think about, because I think about that when you think about the parks. There was that one summer, and we talked about this right after we started this podcast, where we both independently, but also we met up a couple times, we're touring the West's parks. And it's like some of those parks, to get to one place, like the northernmost or the southernmost part of those parks, that's quite a trek, right? And so I think about in like being in charge of the park, that's a really large area. So even though this one's kind of like a small park, it's very long to get from one side to the other of it. And so like in terms of managing the park, it's a lot to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like taking a business trip to go to the other side of Canyonlands. Like, it's a day drive.
Yeah, exactly. So there has to be, even though, yeah, okay, this is all one park, there's a lot of logistics that go into keeping all areas of that park going. And this one is apparently very famous for its bird watching. So I guess I'm of that age now. Gotta knock those weird northern birds that I wouldn't see down here off the list.
Yeah, see, I haven't got to that age yet.
It's coming. It's coming.
I got to the history and how do they do that age. And now I'm getting into the history of conflict and smoking meats age.
I was going to say, yeah, you're in your grilling age. Uh-huh. That little bird's watching you from just around the corner, man. Yep.
Okay, so then we go to somewhere where I would like to go to in the wintertime, and I actually have been to, which is White Sands, and that was December of 2019.
Again, awesome. I had no idea this was a national park now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so this is in New Mexico. It is one of the coolest places to go. Just amazing. It's in the Tularosa Basin. If you're ever in New Mexico and you're checking out all the cool, you know, science-y things, this is down and around Alamogordo and all those places that are pretty famous, scientifically speaking. And you should absolutely go. This gypsum sand, which makes the white sand, is everywhere, and it is a surreal landscape.
It is. And what's even wilder to me is, like, especially on the east side of the park, it's just like it stops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, this big pile of sand starts in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. It's just over. Yep. That's exactly right. I haven't been there in a long, long time. That makes me sad.
I think it was probably 2009 or 10 last time I was there.
Wow. Yeah. I was probably somewhere around there as well. So,
You get all these, there's lots of dried up lake beds, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that water contains gypsum, which when the water evaporates, you get selenite crystals. Mm-hmm. And then the selenite crystals are broken down by wind and water and make sand. And because of the dominant wind direction, we get the dune pattern that we've got there.
Right, exactly. So you get this big pile of sand that just kind of swirls around in that location. Like Sand Dunes National Park has actually been in Colorado there. It's been a park for quite some time, where you also have a big pile of sand, different sand, a little bit different reasons for being there in the first place, but same super large Aeolian structures. So Aeolian being this windblown sand. And then you get these really cool like ripples on top of the big sand dunes and all that. And there's always, you know, sand, surfing down the sand on sleds and all the fun stuff that you get to do in sandy places. I remember doing this and then, of course, hitting these layers because it's gypsum, right? So you get some rainfall and you can get some crusty layers in there. And so, I don't know, it's not quite as fun sometimes because you run into these really crunchy layers underneath all the soft stuff at the top.
Yeah, and I mean, the water table's only a few feet down there.
Yeah.
So the sand is about, 10 meters or so thick in most places. They can get to have 15 meter tall dunes on the western side. That's where the bigger dunes are. Again, wind direction. Mm-hmm. The eastern side, the dunes are smaller. And that's where that really abrupt cutoff is.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a few feet to water, and then, yeah, once you get the rain, things can get kind of frozen for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really crunchy. So you got to start walking back around on there and getting everything broken back up again. What's so cool now, like, this is a national park, and so now they have all these cool ranger-led programs, which was not a thing before, right? You would just go and play on it, and luckily, you know, I was on geology field trips. And so we got to learn a little bit about it, but it's really neat now to have all these other programs that go along with being a national park. And they do like full moon night concerts and stuff out on the dunes. How cool is that?
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like full moon nights and then like midnight hikes and stuff out on the dunes. That would be super cool. So that's really neat that this landscape is getting appreciated in that way. Now, I think before it felt, I don't know, not underappreciated, but, and it was a, you know, national historic district before, but I don't know, doesn't have the same gravitas as being a national park, I guess.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's some other interesting, like, even if you're not into the geology, there's some really interesting plants that have evolved there because the dunes move so fast. The plants either have to grow really fast or come up with fascinating structures to protect their roots.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of interesting plant life out there too that has adapted to this small microcosm.
Yeah.
That is this dune environment. And one of the things that was holding it up from being a national park, it's certainly not the size. The park is officially 145,000 acres, mm-hmm. 590 square kilometers. But was the fact that there's a missile testing range there, and you can't really have people out there.
Yeah, that becomes problematic, right?
Yes, there were a lot of negotiations involved in getting this to become a national park because there's the White Sands Missile Range and the associated Holloman Air Force Base as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, so really close to stuff maybe you don't want a lot of people hanging out around. So, I mean, I'm guessing, do they close the park, I wonder, for missile testing and stuff?
Not that I know of, but I know there are some roads that had gates that would be like missile test in progress and gates would come down, kind of like a train.
Okay. I mean, and this is, if you're out in, you know, we were out in the Wichitas this weekend on a field trip, and it's the same sort of thing because the Wichita National Wildlife Refuge is very close to the Army base Fort Sill here in Southwest Oklahoma, and that's where you go to do like gun training, like not like little guns, like actual like large scale howitzer type stuff. And so if you're in that area, very frequently you hear an amazing amount of explosions all the time. So. And there will be parts of the wildlife refuge that are like, don't go over this 20-foot fence. This is the military. There's live ammo everywhere. So I imagine it's stuff like that out there.
Yes, except mm-hmm. rocket-powered.
Except rocket-powered. That's exactly right. A little bit bigger. It's really cool, though, going from Indiana Dunes to White Sands as well, because there was also a glacial lake here, not necessarily glacial, but during that time period, Lake Otero. And so there are all these like fossilized footprints because in the Tularosa Basin, there was this huge Playa Lake, like you just said, but at the same time that the different lakes were up there in the Great Lakes making the Indiana Dunes. So that's kind of neat. Now, when you think about this part of southern New Mexico, you know, obviously you think about really arid, hot cactuses, and it wasn't like that back during the last ice age. And so it had more like grasslands and all the animals that come along with those ice age grasslands. And so a little more like Great Plains than arid, cactusy area that it is now. And this makes for a great place to preserve some fossils. So there are trackways, which we've talked about fossil trackways before, but it's cool because these trackways are human footprints in this gypsum sand in this playa that have been preserved. So that's pretty cool. And it said they've been dated to 22,000 years.
Yeah, they are thought to be the oldest known footprints in North America.
Yeah, that's really cool. So that's stuff that I hadn't seen those when I'd been out there before. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, when I was out there, it was definitely take a trash can lid, spend the afternoon sliding down the dunes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
And then go on into Carlsbad.
Yep, that is exactly it. So that's pretty neat. Totally across on a different side of the country. Also Ice Age related. Man, I wonder if like 10 years ago they were like, this is the time of the Ice Age. Because they put together that Ice Age trail, you know, national. It's not quite a
national
park.
Yeah, it sounds like
park.
It could be a push in terms of the Park Service.
Yeah, that is the Ice Age National Scenic Trail or whatever. Yeah, that's very interesting. We're on to you, Park Service.
And if you want to come on and talk about it.
Yes. Please set us straight. But maybe this isn't true because the last park isn't really Ice Age related.
Not really at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. New River Gorge, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. And so this is from December of 2020.
I don't remember this in the John Denver song.
I do not at all either. And honestly, I'm struggling to figure out based on here, like what exactly this looks like a super large area. So this is kind of encompassing a large area of the New River. That's the name of the river. Not that it's new. In and around West Virginia, because this is a national park and preserve.
And it's kind of large. It's in between a lot of the ones we've been talking about. It's about 73,000 acres or 295 square kilometers.
I feel like it's so much harder to get around with all those trees and hills, though.
Yeah, it's not just a big expanse that you can go walking across. In fact, there are exposures of over 1,000 feet of sandstone and shale here. So there's a significant vertical slice through geology.
Which is really hard to get out there because of all the... Well, you know, right? You lived in Pennsylvania. That's really hard to get out there because of all the vegetation, right?
Yeah, I remember my first mapping assignment in Pennsylvania saying, what do we take a strike and dip on? You know, that little thing sticking up out of the trail that might be in place. But yeah, how do you take a strike and dip on that? It's tiny. You estimate.
Get in there. My iPad won't fit on this.
My Brunton wouldn't fit on that.
So this is... Yeah, this one's really interesting. I haven't spent a lot of time out here in this part of the world. And so this is in West Virginia. Like we said, it's sort of in the southern, south central part of West Virginia. I mean, it looks absolutely gorgeous for sure. And there's a place called the Sandstone Visitor Center, which clearly I want to go to. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And... It's got a lot of, as you would expect, with a lot of vertical change. There's a lot of erosion happening. There are very large boulders. But what I found was most interesting was the coal seams that were exposed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That the coal out there is so interesting to me because obviously all I can ever think about is these things getting like, lit on fire and never burning out, which is unbelievable.
Right, like the Centralia story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So if you've driven through this part of the country, you know that they basically whacked the tops of the mountains off if there was a coal seam partway down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And got to the coal, and there's all these flat tops at a suspiciously same elevation. And there was, so like I said, there are four seams of coal running through this area. It's considered some of the best coal in the world.
Hmm. Just for its like So coal goes through from it being gushy carbon stuff to being super light in terms of weight and density. So it packs more punch per piece of coal in terms of energy. Is that why?
Yeah. So this is bituminous. Mm-hmm. So it's not all the way up to anthracite yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really clinky coal. Yeah.
But it is, they called it the smokeless New River coal.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like some propaganda, doesn't it?
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
So yeah, this is not a park that I would have really gone looking for, but I think it'd have some really gorgeous hikes to it.
Exactly. So I saw on their website that there's a lot of rock climbing going on out there. And it said it's like one of the premier, some of these cliffs over these gorges are like the premier rock climbing in the East. And let me tell you, these sandstones have some amazing Leisengang banding on them. Just amazing.
Yeah, there says there are over 1,400 established routes in the park.
Yeah, unbelievable. So that's kind of cool that it's this big rock climbing park. And I don't know about you, but looking at all these national park websites, there's all these little bark ranger programs where your doggy can be a little junior bark ranger.
Yeah, ours are too rotten for that.
Oh, I love it. My friend Lisa's dog, Sunny, is a bark ranger. And that might be the most, like, jealous I've ever been, was getting the picture of good boy Sunny with his bark ranger badge. But yeah, so, you know, you might think of the National Park Service as this antiquated thing that exists to take care of all these parks that were built in the 1800s and early 1900s, but no, we're still making parks, and I think that's fantastic.
It is. And some of them are the size of large regions of other countries, exactly. Which is just fascinating because of the scale of some of the space, especially out in the West.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And you're right. I mean, even here in the East, that is no joke of a size for the New River Gorge National Park. So yeah, get out there and enjoy your public lands. That's what they're there for, and I think it's really great that they're being preserved for everyone as opposed to turned into anything else they could be turned into. And you know,
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of fly fishing in a lot of these parks that's available.
I bet there is. And that brings us to everybody's favorite segment of the show, Fun Paper Friday.
Yay! Did you love
this? Oh, I loved this paper. It's so good. I used to tie flies.
Oh my gosh.
I still have the stuff to do it.
You did not. Oh my goodness.
I don't have a fly pole that's worth anything now, but I still, and sitting out in the garage, have all my fly tying, my little vise and all the threads and everything.
Oh my gosh. So, does the fly matter? The Crackpot Study in Evidence-Based Trout Fishing by Britton, Evans, and Potter on behalf of the Collaborative, Randomized, and Controlled Kennet Piscatorial Options Trial. Crackpot. Of course you tied flies. So I read this book, and I know I talked about it on here before, called The Feather Thief. So if you were looking for one of the most riveting nonfiction books you could ever read, at least I felt like this, The Feather Thief is where it's at. And it's about this fairly recent, scandalous, It's so funny to me. So this kid essentially stole all of these stuffed birds from part of the British Museum. And these were from like the heyday of Victorian era when these naturalists were out killing everything they could to preserve it for science, right? And essentially a whole lot of birds went extinct because of women's fashion, right? Because back in Victorian times, you would wear like entire birds on your hat or whatever. And also because of fly tying. Insane.
Would not have thought of that.
Insane to me. And so this kid was so driven because he was such a good fly tier. And things get more and more like you can tie flies with these outrageous things. Even this paper talks about the hair from a rat scrotum is one of the things used in these wild ties. And so it's these really weird bird feathers that they would tie. And the funniest part to me is that most of these fly tiers, especially associated with the story, they're not even fishermen.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this kid had never fished at all.
They just do it as like a competitive fly tying?
It's just a competitive sport. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy?
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. So ever since I read that last summer, I started to get obsessed with flies because it's so random to me. So it's really funny to me that, of course, you've tried to do this, but obviously this paper.
Oh, I mean, I've got a blue ribbon from the county fair.
Oh my gosh! Was it you that stole these birds?
No, it was not.
Oh my gosh! If I even remotely knew or thought that you could handle memorizing a bunch of bird genuses, I would be nervous. But I know you don't care about that. So. Clearly wasn't you.
I mean, I didn't even memorize minerals, so.
Yeah, see, exactly.
It was not me.
Oh, man. So this was one of the most enjoyable Christmas BMJ papers I've ever read. It is so well written, and it is hilarious.
So five doctors wanted to spend more time fly fishing, so they came up with this crackpot to try five different flies, meaning that each of them had to spend five-hour fishing sessions testing their hypothesis, which their hypothesis was really, as they said, this was a results-driven hypothesis.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. And as any good medical journal is wont to do, you obviously have to talk about who partook in this, and I love it. It was... All their representative samples were male and of early or protracted middle age.
Right.
And the data collection part is just great because it's like every fisherman joke you could put out into the world is written in scientific language and put into this paper.
As well as... like, they can't reveal the location because some local poachers may also subscribe to the BMJ.
Exactly. The number of fish reported as hooked but not landed differed significantly between anglers but not between flies. Data invidious and not presented.
Right. Oh. Also that anything over the legal maximum capture was not reported.
Correct. You know, this was actually really cool, though, because they did come out with some statistics, which is very interesting. And so I thought, well, I mean, this is the BMJ, right? And obviously, this is taking place in the River Kennet in Berkshire. But they talk about rainbow trout, which is not a native species. It's native to North America. And that surprised me that it was there at all. And they had a lot to say about it that was very obnoxious.
Yes, like it wouldn't care about the variety or delicacy of the cuisine as with the brown trout. It would just eat any rubbish.
Exactly. And I said, yeah, this is a very interesting portrayal of this species. What was also interesting is there was a big difference between these flies, between the two species. And, you know, they say, you know, hey, yeah, rainbow trout don't actually reproduce in English waters. So it's not like they're, you know, even though they're invasive, they haven't really invaded and taken over because they're not native to there. And so
they don't have the opportunity to evolve.
Exactly. They don't have the opportunity to evolve. It was very interesting. I will say, what do you think about this picture of these flies? They don't look a lot different to me, but obviously I do not have the aesthetic eye for flies.
No, I mean, they're all very similar stylistically.
Mm-hmm. I like the one that's got little antenna, though. He's pretty cute.
Yeah, the one right above that, the one on the far left middle the figure is...
Crazy cat-looking one.
Yeah, that's... I tied a lot of things that looked like that, or the one directly opposite it on the right.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So they did come up. I liked the fact that they asked everyone how successful they thought the flies would be, the utility of each fly, before they went out there. I thought that was an interesting answer, or an interesting question to ask.
Well, and also, I love the point, because I've always felt kind of this way, that the only people that care what's on the end of the line, what specific type of fly, are the fishermen, not the fish.
Exactly! They made that point a couple of times, which I kind of loved.
I also love in the key messages, one of them is, doctors are poor predictors of the utility of a fly.
Exactly. It was quite the range, actually. Mm-hmm. This was just really interesting. So, I mean, the whole takeaway is you want to use a cinnamon sedge fly, which could be interchanged with the silver sedge fly, they think, because it caught a spectacular number of brown trout over any of the other flies.
Yes, but it says the findings do call for urgent funding of a definitive large multi-river trial.
Oh boy. As is the want of the BMJ, the abstract is so spectacular, you know, that lays out the objectives. The conclusion of this also states that the possible prolongation of doctors' leisure time consequent on the use of unproductive trout flies has resource implications for the national health system.
Right.
Oh, I love it. It was really good. They also made a lot of jabs at the clearly retired people who they invited to the study and how angry they were that they could not also spend that much time fly fishing.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also great in the acknowledgments, none of the investigators has any intention of taking the slightest notice of the results of this study.
Yeah. This so one have was, you ever gone fly fishing?
Oh my gosh. So no, I used to play with my brother's fly rods all the time because I loved the way that the reel sounds, because it sounds so different than the other ones.
Yeah, it does.
So I've never actually gone, but it is like one of my bucket list things is to learn how to do it. I think I'm obsessed with like Ever River Runs Through It, and those, I've read all of those fly fishing short stories, and like I'm really, and fly fishing is a big deal on the Arkansas River up by where Field Camp is, and I think that I would quite enjoy this pastime. Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. Like, I haven't done it in years, but it's one of the few pastimes where you can cast your rod forward and somehow hook yourself in the back of the
net. I remember that. I think that's why I was never allowed to do it, because I am not the definition of grace in any stretch of the imagination. So mm-hmm. I think that was why I was not allowed to do it. But
I've definitely been hooked in the hand by somebody else who then proceeded to try to cast. Oh, that hurt.
Oh, on that note.
Yeah. And that's a different BMJ article.
Correct.
Probably.
I'm sure it's in there.
So if folks have something to say about fly fishing or their favorite national park or what national park they're going to go to this summer, how can they get a hold of us?
They can do that. Don'tpanicgeocast@gmail.com. Tweet those national park suggestions to us at @don'tpanicgeo. I am @ShannonDoolin. John is @geo_Lehman. And as always, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to support us, you may do so. patreon.com/don'tpanicgeo.
And until next week, remember, don't panic.
It's not an exact science.
Any opinions, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed are solely ours and do not necessarily reflect the views of our employers or funding agencies.